Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
6 degrees right now in Nashville. The time is 9 o'clock.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, the hardest quiz in public radio. What kind of mind does it take to play this game?
By the way, I just computed we got a 7 on the SAT math. But a 712 on the verbal.
There you go. And how best to prepare for such an ordeal? Our suggestion, start with a good breakfast.
It's a breakfast cereal consisting of stones, amulets, and dried guinea pigs.
How'd you going for a while? Right.
And for our part, we promise to enhance your educational experience by filtering out the dross. You're not going to believe how smooth that sounds after editing. You're just not going to believe it. Why should I make the radio audience suffer through that like we did? No. The suffering is nearly at an end. Says You is next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Egypt's top prosecutor is apparently planning to appeal the verdict in Hosni Mubarak's trial, even though Mubarak and his former interior minister were handed life sentences for failing to stop the killing of protesters in last year's uprising. Mubarak and his two sons were acquitted on corruption charges yesterday, and senior police officers were cleared of complicity in the killings, sparking anger and protests in Cairo and other cities this weekend. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says his country is facing a regional and international onslaught, what he calls a real war. And in a speech to Syria's parliament today, he said the Syrian people have rejected international meddling in the country. His remarks were his first public comment since the massacre in Hula. The BBC's Jim Muir reports President Assad said even monsters would not have carried out such an act.
Anybody hoping that President Assad's first public speech since January might open up some lines of advance towards a solution will have been disappointed. He repeated his regime's long-standing argument that it's facing not an internal political crisis, but an outside plot using domestic instruments to destroy the country because of its resistance to Israel. That imposed war, as he called it, had failed through all its cycles. First popular disturbances, then armed action, then terrorist assassinations and bomb attacks, and now, he said, attempts to stir up sectarian strife through such atrocities as the massacre at Hula.
The BBC's Jim Muir reporting. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta is in Vietnam, where he visited the former U.S. Air Naval Base at Cam Ranh Bay.
This is the first time that Secretary of Defense has come back to Cam Ranh Bay since the war years. And I think it's an important symbol of how the relationship between the United States and Vietnam has improved.
Panetta says he hopes to encourage efforts with Vietnam to locate and identify more of the 1,200 American war dead who are still missing. Michigan Congressman Thaddeus McCotter has ended his bid to win re-election as a write-in candidate after failing to file enough petition signatures to qualify for the primary ballot. Michigan Public Radio's Rick Pluta reports.
Thaddeus McCotter ran a brief campaign for president last year. After dropping out, he filed petitions to run for a sixth term representing suburban Detroit in Congress. It turns out all but 244 signatures out of 2,000 were faked, photocopies of actual signatures. McCotter was about to launch a write-in re-election campaign, but he would be running in a redrawn district largely new to him. Other candidates are eyeing the race, and his grassroots support in the district has dwindled. McCotter released a statement saying his decision allows him to focus on winding up his congressional career and cooperating with the criminal investigation into possible petition fraud. For NPR News, I'm Rick Pluta in Lansing, Michigan.
And you're listening to NPR News. Firefighters battling that big wildfire in southwestern New Mexico are being hampered by dry and windy conditions. Officials say the fire in the Gila National Forest has charred more than 354 square miles and is still only about 15% contained. Nancy Guerrero is a spokeswoman for the U.S. Forest Service.
It's breezy. Temperatures are pretty hot right now. The fire is just what we would call skunking around a little bit, so it's growing.
The fire is already the largest in New Mexico's recorded history and the largest currently burning in the country. A parafire sparked by lightning merged to create the massive blaze. More than 1,000 boats have taken to the Thames as part of the celebration of Queen Elizabeth's 60 years on the throne. The Queen is taking part. She is on the Royal Barge right now. Larry Miller reports that her barge began life as a River Thames sightseeing boat, but after 6 months of painstaking work, it's been made fit for royalty.
The 210-foot-long Spirit of Chartwell has been lavishly decorated with replica carvings. The color scheme is red, gold, and purple, and resembles the royal barges of centuries past. The pageant master Adrian Evans told the BBC, the barge is the biggest wow moment of the flotilla.
More a kind of palace on the water than the traditional fate barge that we're used to from those Canaletto images. But the craftsmanship involved with the canopy and the prow sculpt and the floral displays themselves are absolutely breathtaking.
The canopy over the Queen was hurriedly extended overnight to provide that extra bit of rain cover on this cold, drizzly day. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
And I'm Giles Snyder in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in San Francisco comes from the good folks at KQED FM and the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins Hotel. Historic elegance in the heart of San Francisco. On the web at intercontinentalhotels.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. From the stage of the Canbar Theater at the Jewish Community Center in San Francisco, California, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. We began this season by acknowledging that he always has been and ever shall be the Prince of Pronouns, Mr. Barry Nolan. May her adverb advocacy spark the gypsy in your soul, Francine Akbar. And ladies and gentlemen, we end the season as we began by trotting out the old gray dangling participle himself, Mr. Tony Khan. And who leads today?
The old gray dangling participle.
Yep.
Sorry. Mr. Khan, welcome.
That's me.
To my left, team two, producer, performer, author, bon vivant, plastic surgeon, raconteur, and trader of commodities, Mr. Arnie Raisman. Yes. Columnist, critic, funster, punster, the spark that lights my powder keg, Carolyn Fay Fox. And our beacon of restraint, our concession to decorum, enjoy the elegant eloquence of Miss Paula Lyons. Okay, who's the chief?
Sparky here.
Miss Carolyn. Poor captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of What's the Difference? Oh. Help comes from Mike Hoyt of Uxbridge, Massachusetts. Thanks, Mike. Carolyn, what's the difference between a dork and a nerd?
Between a dork and a nerd. A nerd is smarter.
Yes.
Yeah,
A nerd is smarter.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, a nerd has some sort of
stock options.
Skill.
Oh, yeah, a nerd. Yeah. Academia with stock
options.
Yeah,
whereas a dork is just a
jerk.
Kind of a pathetic, helpless, hapless lump of humanity.
How many points do you figure?
All
you
right.
figure 10 points, yeah. You know, one of the things is a nerd knows he or she is a nerd.
Yes.
Dork is totally unaware.
Not a clue.
But a nerd, in my office, it's implied that the person has some technological knowledge.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
It's someone scholarly. A nerd is someone scholarly, inclined to get involved in technology or technique. Mm-hmm. A dork is someone stupid by choice.
By choice.
And get this, according to the dictionary, one who is also aromatically challenged.
Oh.
Dork Whoa. Uncorked.
Try this one, Tony. What's the difference between to skimp and to scrimp?
Oh. Well, I used to skimp until we got to the hotel that we've been staying at. Now I what's the other one?
To skimp and to scrimp.
Oh, to skimp and to scrimp. Yeah, now I scrimp. Okay. To skimp is to jump over something in a succession of things so that you don't get them all.
No.
You know?
No.
No, I don't think so.
It's
no.
Just
I think it's more to use
portions.
Less than is normally allotted.
Yes.
Right.
That's good. To give barely enough or to save by barely getting through. What about to
skimp? But you can skimp on something, right? You know, you put a little bit less of the pepper.
Yes.
That's
right.
Exactly.
That's the idea.
And to scrimp is to hold on to as much as you possibly can, as in to scrimp and save.
There's one other element, and you got the 10 points.
It involves soft objects.
To scrimp is to do without.
Well, you know what? Thrifty is such a great part of that you get the 10 points. Yeah, it's there is a gathering aspect to scrimping, to gather together all resources and assets. And then be thrifty.
So letting the paper towels dry and using them over and over.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Perfect. Arnie, try this one. What's the difference between gel, J-E-L-L, and gel, G-E-L?
Oh, well.
Oh, one you put in your hair.
Yeah. That's true.
And the other is when great things come together and work out.
You know, when things gel,
they
solidify.
True.
But isn't that the same G-E-L?
No.
Well,
G-E-L is a thing.
And if you add O to the first one, you get dessert.
Yeah.
There's always room to do that.
G-E-L is like a gelatinous substance.
Yeah.
And we put it in hair to hold it or curl it or
right.
something.
And
but there are other kinds of gels. But for something to gel, to come together, isn't that the G-E-L-L?
It is,
yes.
In fact.
It is.
Yes. When
and
things solidify.
So what? But can you encapsulate this into one difference that's pretty grammatical, actually?
One's a verb and one's a noun.
That's
yeah.
what it is.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly
G-E-L's
right.
G-E-L's a noun. Yeah.
G-E-L actually can be a verb or a noun. There are instances where G-E-L
can
be a verb.
Hair.
But J-E-L-L can't. Gel
well,
is a verb.
No, you could say the big gel. You know, like a really cold period. So you could say that's
the big gel.
Gel.
I
so
thought it was
a
big gel.
But that's the difference. So that's 10 points for that. Very good. Francine, from a child rearing perspective, what's the difference between discipline and punishment?
Hopefully there is.
One is before and one is after.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nah, you're not getting away with that one.
What part of discipline did you not understand?
Yeah.
Discipline implies that there are rules and behavior expected and what is and what isn't okay to do, and punishment is when you've done the not okay thing.
It's
a consequence.
You can discipline your child by making them conform to expectations and to rules, but punishment indicates that there was some kind of negative consequence and reinforcement, not simply making them conform.
You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points. That's a good job. It Punishment tells a child he or she has been bad and is usually accompanied by a physical or similar reprimand. It's just telling them that it's wrong. Discipline tells the child of the wrongdoing and then provides explanation of the problem and possible alternative modes of behavior.
That's why it's not called crime and discipline.
Because that was a longer book.
Because there's an axe that goes into somebody's head. In
yeah,
that
that's true. All right. Try this one, Paula. What's the difference from an IRS perspective between revenue and income?
Oh.
Ooh, there was a lot of oohs out there in the crowd.
Well, income is money you are paid for delivering a service to your company or to whatever. But revenue, it has to be earned by an entity, does it not?
Well, that's not quite, yeah, that's true, but it's not quite the distinction that that they draw here.
Well, revenue is not always income.
That's true.
Yeah, it's just money that you got, and not necessarily from anything you really earned.
Yes, that can be. Well, no, but from a company point of view.
Yeah.
Revenue is very important, but it's what's left over after expenses is perhaps the company's income.
You're not pursued by an income-oer.
That you know what, Paula? That's real close. That's 9 points there. There's one other element you want to get here, if you can.
Profit, perhaps.
Well, you know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points. Yeah, because you understand that it is profit and after expense income. From the IRS perspective, revenue is all money that comes in a given period, whether from royalties, sales, services, anything.
Right.
That's revenue. Income refers to the net result of your goods and services minus your expenses.
You get to keep, in other words.
That's right. That's your income. And finally, Barry, one of my favorites of the day. What's the difference between cursing and swearing?
Oh. Damned if I know.
What Tony said. Cursing can be an imprecation which suggests to curse something is to wish ill on something in a manner that can be quite profane, and swearing is using some of the words that George Carlin has explained cannot be used on radio.
Yeah.
Would you like a list?
Yeah. No, that's all right.
Okay.
Does cursing imply cursing someone or something versus simply casting abomination words around?
No, I think
you
Barry's,
can also
Barry's,
if you hit your thumb with a hammer,
yes,
you can swear. But if you are angry,
then you would curse the hammer.
And then you could later curse the hammer separately.
I think swearing also, in some crazy kind of way, involves bringing a higher power to bear witness.
Well, actually, both of them do, okay. But I'm going to give you 10 points because the hammer is just a great example of that. Cursing involves epithets and profanity meant to wish misfortune, evil, and doom on someone. Yeah. Swearing, as in swearing an oath or anything like that, means to use profanity to express sincere, vehement dislike or distaste for the hammer or the person. 10 points for that. Nice job, you guys, on that category. And let's go on to round two. Round two is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Nice Guy Trio. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points up for grabs to Tony if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Kipu.
Kipu.
Q-U-I-P-U. Kipu. Gentlemen? C Says You takes to the road next season with shows in Nashville, Tennessee, New England, Milwaukee, and Points South. New taping dates and locations are up on our website. More to follow shortly. You can find out where and when we'll be near you by stopping by at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So remember, season 17 kicks off September in Nashville, followed by Milwaukee in October. And we hope this is the year you'll be able to join us for a live performance of Says You. Says You returns after this from home.
Hello again, I'm Warren Alney. On To The Point, Florida has decided presidential elections before and could do it again. How come election officials are purging the voting rolls of more Democrats and independents than Republicans? Next time on To The Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock.
Support for Says You and WPLN is made possible in part by member support for Nashville Public Radio. Pledge now in support of Nashville Public Radio at WPLN.org and you'll have a chance to win a trip for two to Ireland. Our summer e-pledge drawing will be held this Friday. Details are at WPLN.org. It's 21 minutes after 9, 75 degrees in Nashville.
You can hear Says You again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. That's the Nice Guy Trio. That's Rob Reich on the accordion, Darren Johnston on the trumpet, and Daniel Fabricant on the bass. Thank you very much, guys. It gives me a chance to thank our scorekeepers. Would you help me thank Marcel Oliart and Emily Knopf? Thank you very much for keeping the score. We've had a few moments with the word kipu. We will go, thank you, man. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Kipu. In Ecuadorian folklore, a kipu is a magic stone, amulet, or dried guinea pig used to ward off evil spirits.
Apparently, it didn't work for the guinea pig.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah.
In Ecuadorian folklore, a magic stone, amulet, or dried guinea pig used to ward off evil spirits.
So let me get this straight.
It would be funny if it were a hamster, but it's a guinea pig.
Yeah. So you have a choice of either a stone, an amulet, or a guinea pig?
Yeah.
I'm not taking the guinea pig. I'm not...
Well, that's your choice, Richard.
That's, I guess. How does one dry a guinea pig? I'm not...
Behind the ears.
I guess. That's true. Got to start somewhere.
You might as well.
Arnie, kipu.
It's a breakfast cereal consisting of stones, amulets, and dried guinea pigs.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself? Just ashamed.
Had you going for a while. Well, it is a breakfast cereal consisting of nuts, wheat, and fruit in Nicaragua.
A Nicaraguan breakfast cereal.
Yes.
Okay, that's altogether possible.
Keep right.
Nikios.
Frosted Nicks. Right.
Or, Paula, it could be something else.
Well, actually, it's a kind of a counting device from Peru. And it's made of string of different lengths and different colors.
A counting device?
Yeah, like kind of like a, I guess it's their version of a calculator or an abacus or something. Hmm.
A counter, a Peruvian counter, a Nicaraguan breakfast cereal.
Or an Ecuadorian.
Or a dried guinea pig. I don't know where you're going to go there, well, but the choice, Tony, is yours.
What a choice, huh? Something for running accounts, something just for the runs. Get quick, I said. You know, it was clearly they got the right part of the world, the QUE.
No,
I think it's just a QUI. No, no, but I mean, oh, the QU, like it. Yeah, right, as in K and Ken and Coca-Cola and Quickie, I mean the Spanish-speaking part of the world. So that's no help whatsoever. I know that it's worth about 412 points in Scrabble.
Yeah, that's, oh, yeah.
That doesn't help either. I don't know. Kipu as a breakfast cereal doesn't sound chewy enough, you know. Kipu. Should be Krakakoa.
Do you have an opinion about the difference in the use of letters in Ecuador versus Peru?
You have a very strong opinion about that.
as do they all. I wouldn't get into that with them ever.
No.
What do you think, guys, between, you know, I mean, the guinea pig? Why the guinea pig? Is that...
Well, I just, it sounds like it certainly could be it, but I just can't imagine. Listen, could I have a stone? If you don't have a stone, I'll take a pig. That just,
keep
I don't
a
get
calculator.
It.
Keeputation? Keeputation. I'm sort of tempted to go with the guinea pig, the magic stone and the amulet.
I would, that's, you know, my inclination also.
Take three keepu and call me in the morning.
Right.
I'll go with that just because it's such an odd.
Don't you keepo on me, right? Okay, so we're going to go with number one for reasons that are obvious and will disappear in the edit.
Carolyn, they have come to the conclusion that keepu is a dried guinea pig. It's going to take me a while to get over that one.
No,
but
magic amulet.
Magic amulet.
A magic amulet. That's what they say it is. Is that, in fact, what it means?
Kipu, please fake a definition.
Ah.
Yes, not even close.
Ah.
All right, audience, it's your turn. How many think the Nicaraguan breakfast cereal? How many think it's the Peruvian counter? Well, Paula, that's not even close. The audience thinks it's the Peruvian counter. Is that, in fact, what quipu is?
Quipu, a Peruvian abacus using strings of various lengths and colors.
There you go. 10 points for the audience.
And I would bet that the language is Quechua.
Let's go on to round three. Morris Bowles of Nashville, Tennessee, listens to us on WPLN-FM in Nashville, where we will be next fall. He sent us a round titled Mental Math. No pencils, no electronics, no abacus needed to answer the following.
Just a dead guinea pig.
Carolyn, a dozen eggs weighs 2 pounds, and a cup of milk weighs 0.5 pound. But when you mix them together, they weigh less. Why?
Because you spilled some.
No.
Because the eggs are out of the shell.
Out of the shell.
They're out of the shells, exactly. See how easy this will be? The difference is the eggshells. All right, Tony, try this one. And you may actually need to write this down, but try it.
All right.
AA times AA equals ABA. What is the total of A plus B? Don't freak out here.
AA times AA.
AA equals ABA. What is the total of A plus B?
Okay, so one, A is one, B is nothing?
No.
No.
So if what times AA is one times one, which is one, and so one.
No, AA would then be 11.
AA.
Well, no, if you're out.
So these, this is,
Algebraically, AA means A times A.
So this is 11 times 11 equals 121.
That's right.
So B is 2.
And?
What is the total of A plus B?
1 plus 2, 3.
They got there.
Took you long enough.
Yeah, say, that was a real dental experience, but...
more dental than mental.
But we got there. How many points, audience?
They're bad at math. Don't listen to them.
You know what? I'm going to give them 7 points because they eventually
what?
Got... No? How many? All right, 5 points. How about we say 5 points? I'm going to give him 5 points for that, so that's how that'll work. Try.
Ooh, that hurts.
All right, what's. Arnie, try this one. What's
I want
next?
5 points. For sitting here.
Yeah. Arnie, what's next in sequence? 1, 2, 3, 6, and 7. What's next in that sequence? 1, 2, 3, 6, and 7. What's the next number in the sequence?
I think 8.
Yeah, is it 8?
6, 3.
No.
No.
Should be.
Oh, 1 and 2 are 3, 6 and 7.
13. Yeah. 13. Oh, it is not 13. Check your math.
Oh. 12.
14.
14 is exactly right. Yeah. Can you explain how you got that?
Go ahead.
A dried guinea pig told me.
Good enough for me, 14.
And how did you get that?
Add one, multiply by two, and that's when you get the 7 times 2 is 14.
I see. 14.
Very good.
Okay.
Try this one, Francine. How many months have 31 days, and how many months have 30?
Oops. This is 30 days, has September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31, excepting for February, which has 28.
Wait, except that months that have 31 days also have 30 days.
Right. Oh, yes. Right.
So all but one. So 11 have 30.
So how many days have 31 days? 11 have 30.
Right.
That's correct.
And 30 days.
Four.
8. So
7.
From 11 is 7.
Hey, you got there. 10 points. Let's try this one, Paula. I'm going to give you another sequence, but this is a little bit different. What's the next number? 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7. What's the next number? 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7. This is makes it 2 points.
I want to say 12, but I think you're going to.
No, it's not 12.
Okay.
9?
No. Not 9. 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7.
10?
Boy. We're just guessing all over the place.
No, there was a reason for 12. But
what was the reason for 12?
Well, 1, 2, 3. 1 and 2 add up to 3.
Yep.
5 and 7 add up to 12. So I thought it might be that. But you're looking for something different.
That's interesting. Yeah. Look at some.
And I was going, there's one between 1 and 2, and one between 1 and 3, 2 and 3, and 2 between 3 and 5, and 2 between 5 and 7. So,
so
I was going up to 3 now.
To 9.
To 10. Well,
and you know something? For that, I'm going to give you the points. I think that's right.
Okay.
But that's not really the answer. I can't say that he's wrong. I can't say that he's wrong. So you have to get the 10.
One way to do a sequence.
Yeah, you have to get the 10 points. Barry, what's the next number?
The next prime number in the sequence is 11.
That's exactly right. The next prime number is 11. All right. And
the reasoning is?
They are the...
They're prime numbers.
Yeah, the prime numbers. Those are the prime numbers.
I never was taught those in school.
You remember
Crime and punishment.
I like to use novelty numbers.
Okay, then.
It's going to be... You know, there's two things we don't do on this show. We don't do math and we don't do sports. And now I understand why.
We're
word people.
We do lots
of sports.
Yes, we do do lots of sports.
And I never know them.
All right. And Barry... Barry gets the hardest one of all. And Barry, I'll let you approximate on this because you'll see why in a minute. What is the approximate difference in the area of a square with side 10 and a circle with a diameter of 10? What's the approximate difference in the area of a square with side 10?
A square with side 10 has an area, so you've asked me the area,
yep,
right? A square with side 10 has an area of 100.
That's
right.
Correct.
So a circle has pi r squared.
Right.
So
I'll let you approximate.
So 25 times 3.14 is 75, call it 78.
Yep.
So 78 from 100 is 22.
Almost on the numbers. That's great. That, very good job. Nice job, you guys. Tough category, and thanks for doing it. Let's go on to round 4, which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word Malmsey.
Malmsey.
M-A-L-M-S-E-Y. Malmsey. Gentlemen? Just a quick reminder, Nashville, Tennessee, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Boston, Massachusetts. These are just some of the stops on Says You's Caravan of Cajolery for Season 17. You can find information and details for these performances, as well as others we'll post shortly, at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U, where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So come join us. Hear what the radio audience never hears. Come to a live performance of Says You. Briefly, Says You pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back.
Flamenco music may not be a natural fit for the sitar, but Anushka Shankar says Spanish flamenco and Indian ragas share one thing in common, fancy footwork.
In Indian dance, people wear bells on the feet to accentuate the foot patterns, and it's absolutely in tandem with the percussionist, and in flamenco the same is true.
A raga flamenco journey with Anushka Shankar, next time on The World. Weeknights at 9 o'clock. You're listening to Says You here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. The time is 9:38. It's 77 degrees in Nashville.
That is the Nice Guy Trio. Thank you very much, guys. We have had a few moments with the word Malmsey. We'll go first to Tony Khan.
Well, it's actually the Malmsey twins. It's the adventures of two British identical twins, aged 7 and 9. They did things more slowly. and genteelly there, yes, who try repeatedly and unsuccessfully to date Nancy Drew. Well, in our theme of guinea pigs, it's kind of guinea pig Latin. It means sheer utter nonsense.
Sheer utter nonsense is Malmsey. Could be. Or it could be something else. Francine, what say you?
Well, I think it sounds like a dread African disease involving boils.
Boils.
But it's not.
Oh. But it's not.
It is a rich, sweet, aromatic wine.
A rich...
Not involving boils.
A rich, sweet, aromatic wine is Malmsey. Could be. Or it could be a third alternative. Barry, what's your take?
Malmsey is the desired flavor of burrow groves.
What?
Of what?
Yes.
Remember, all Malmsey
were the
Malmsey
were the
boar
groves and the mome rats outgrave.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, it is Malmsey is trepidatious. To be shaky or fearful or trepidatious. Mom went all Malmsey over mountain climbing.
Till she met little Lamsey Dybe.
Yes.
Malmsey means either shaky and fearful, a rich aromatic wine, or sheer utter nonsense. It's one of those three, and the choice, Carolyn, is yours.
What?
I'd go with trepidatious.
And you're going with?
This is just personal prejudice. I write utter nonsense every time I can't think of anything. why not that sweet aromatic wine?
Because it sounds like mead.
It sounds like mead or Malbec or bad.
Yeah. So you think it's why isn't trepidatious just sort of a play on palsy or something?
Because when I heard the word, I thought it meant sort of queasy and had that sort of unsettled kind of feeling. And so that sort of resonates with me.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Capitan.
I think it's shaky and fearful in a sort of Swedish way. Malmsey.
You'll find it's an unpretentious Malmsey, which is
unpretentious.
Like aftertaste of dread.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Often drunk by either dork or nerd Malmsey.
Yes.
One of the twins.
And if it makes you sick, you call the Medoc.
All right, stop.
Yeah. We'll stop. We'll choose Barry.
You're going to choose Barry.
Yes.
Barry, they say that Malmsey is indeed shaky and fearful. Is that what Malmsey is?
They may want to drown their sorrow with a fine glass of Malmsey, because that's not the definition.
No.
10 points. That is a bluff. All right, audience, it's your turn. What do you think? Is Malmsey sheer utter nonsense?
Really?
How about the rich aromatic wine? I don't even think it's close. I think most people in this audience think that Malmsey is a rich aromatic wine, Francine. Is that in fact what it is?
Of Cyprus, a rich aromatic wine.
There it is.
Cyprus.
The audience scores again.
You should practice that now.
10 points for Tony's team. This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Michael Murray of Houston, Texas. Michael writes, if I never learn anything else from Says You, I'll always be grateful for finding out just how much Two Bits was. That's the round I always remember. Can I hear it again? You can, Michael. We had to go all the way back to season 2 to find this one. Return with us now to Lincoln, Massachusetts for that particular round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points, define, and for an additional 5, divine the derivations of the following phrases. Carolyn.
Yes.
Go to pot.
Go to pot. Go directly to pot. Do not pass the stove. Can you?
Well, the definition first.
Go to pot means to fall apart.
Fall apart?
Fall apart. Yeah. Fall apart.
It's a Boston phrase.
Yes.
So it means to...
It's not like potash. It's not like just disintegrating
into
nothingness.
Oh, oh no, just...
Going into the ground.
I think Mr. Nolan is pretty anxious here.
Really?
Always anxious.
Basically, one of the things he used to have around the cottage was a big black kettle that sat over the fire, and when food was done with, when you'd picked all the bones off the chicken,
you threw it in the
when
pot.
You picked all the beef off the marrow bone, you threw it in the pot and kept cooking it up, and all the new stuff you just slowly put in there, and it became some gummy, horrible porridge.
It became school lunches.
I think we're hearing the origin of the fruitcake.
Yes, experts tell us that Mr. Nolan's explanation is totally wrong.
You mean that's not it?
But it will be the one that's remembered.
Yes, it is. It is from the blacksmith's practice of throwing unused scraps of metal into a large cooling pot to be melted down for later use. Anything useless, therefore, had gone to pot. Tony?
Yes.
2 bits.
2 bits is 25 cents. You used to be able to buy you a shoe shine, and now 2 bits, the origin of 2 bits, suggests that 4 bits was a 50 cents, and 8 bits would be a dollar.
Keep going.
It's
only a half-hour show.
Well, I'm working toward the gross national product of the United States at the time.
Believe it or not, you're on the right road there.
2 bits of perhaps
it's
the 12-and-a-half-cent
coin that was highly useful and
popular. Not exactly, but you're going to get some point.
Would it have something to do with the, you know, in order to verify that a coin was real, you take a bite out of it and a quarter would be
That's actually what I thought. Any help from the other side?
10 bits?
No, actually the 8 bits was the way to go. Have you ever heard of pieces of 8?
Yes.
Based on the Spanish dollar, which was divided into 8 reals and stamped with a large number 8, each piece of 8 was called a bit, and 2 of those would have made a quarter of a dollar.
Back to pirates.
Except they never quarters in Spain. But it's
Arnie, to mind one's P's and Q's.
Well, I would. And this is probably wrong, but I would have always assumed it's pints and quarts.
Can you elaborate?
Well, it's basically mind your business, mind your manners, mind your show us a proper sense of decorum while you're in the pub. What you're drinking.
That's exactly right. 10 points for that answer. Very good. To mind one's P's and Q's, it means to take pains, to be precise. And when out for a few at the pub, one would recheck the tally of pints and quarts at the end of the night to avoid overcharges. However, there is another explanation, which they now seem to think is correct. Apprentice printers, looking at the reverse images on type blocks, might inadvertently mix P's with Q's if they were not sufficiently alert. So take your choice. Francine, to get the sack.
Oh, yeah. Well, it means to be fired.
It does.
And it is British, I think, in use. And I wonder if it means that when they fired you, what did they do? Maybe give you a sack of flour or something to send you on your way?
Would sackcloth and ashes have anything to do with
it? Well, Tony's a little bit closer. This goes back a way.
Well, if you got fired, you couldn't take inside information with you. Therefore, you'd have a bag thrown over your head before you were hanged.
You can't imagine how close she is.
Really?
Because it does have to do with execution. It's from the Roman punishment of tossing criminals into sacks and drowning them in the Tiber River.
Oh, so this is what it's like to be fired.
Yes.
Wow.
In ancient Rome, they didn't get
around. For some people, it's a much more fun experience.
Yes. 5 points for that. Paula, the apple of one's eye.
Oh, boy.
It's when William Tell slipped.
Well, obviously it means
the
favorite. You're the apple of my eye. You're my favorite. You give me great pleasure.
Yes. 5 points.
Does it have to do with the iris of the eye itself?
Yeah, it has to do with the eye. Yes.
Yeah. How it?
Not the iris per se, but
the pupil. Then
the pupil of the eye
becomes heart-shaped like an apple.
No, it becomes larger if you see something you like.
I'm going to give you 10 points for getting the pupil of the eye.
Excellent.
The apple of one's eye is literally the pupil of the eye. In ancient times, the pupil was thought to be solid, but it was also realized that damage to the pupil would mean blindness and therefore must be protected at all costs. And it has come to mean something which one holds dearest.
So this comes from a
relationship. What does the apple have to do with the pupil back in ancient Greece, though?
Why yeah, well, the stuffed grape leaf of your eye? Or I,
the fig, the grape, right, the goat.
This is where the listening audience comes in. Okay.
I think it's time for the next round.
I think it is. But we have one more to go to Barry. Barry, to pass the buck.
To pass the buck is to try and shift the responsibility or the blame to someone else. The origin of that would be when you passed a dead deer on the road and said, "What to me?"
Yes, right.
What to me? Don't have to clean it up.
Why? And you really think the dead deer thing had a chance?
Right? Okay, that would be.
Any help from the other side?
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I didn't think so. To pass the buck, of course, is to rid oneself of responsibility. From poker, a buck was placed in front of a player next to deal. It might have been, it was originally thought to have been the buckhorn knife, but now they think it was more likely a piece of buckshot was placed in front of you so that they would know you deal next. That's our Spotlight Round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's close. Remember a few weeks ago when Gordon Hanson of Berkeley, California, came up with that round of subway stops titled
yes.
Notes from the Underground?
Yes, we love it.
Phone's been ringing off the hook. Here's a few more. Try this one. Carolyn, Bushy, B-U-S-H-E-Y, what transit system has
B-U-S-H-E-Y?
A stop called Bushy?
B-U-S-H-E-Y.
Would that be in Johannesburg?
It would not, actually.
All right.
To Bushy, we add Pimlico. P-I-M-L-I-C-O.
Oh, Arnie, say it.
So you're, well.
On the tube.
It's on the tubes in London, going all the way out.
That it is, in fact, 8 points. Good job. All right. Try this one, Tony. International District Chinatown.
International District Chinatown. Who divides their town up into districts? Forget about the Chinatown part, right? It's just like international.
Forget about it. It's Chinatown.
National district. Yeah. Safe district.
Forget it, Jake.
International District
Chinatown. I don't think they're going to get it. To International District Chinatown, add Westlake.
Oh! Is that in Scotland? Los Angeles?
It is not in Los Angeles.
And it's not. Does Edinburgh have a? No, it doesn't.
No.
No. Okay.
To International District in Chinatown and Westlake, add Pioneer Square.
Oh. Seattle.
Seattle.
6 points for that. Good job, Seattle. You didn't need Space Needle. Incidentally, for London, you did not need Blackfriars or Abbey Road, so you didn't need those. All right, let's make them a little bit harder.
Yeah.
Try this one, Arnie. Chestnut Hill.
Well, that's a lot of places, isn't
it?
That could be the Green Line in Boston.
It could be.
Why not? Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
He's exactly right. Philadelphia. Boy. You didn't need Walnut Locust, you didn't need Cecil B. Moore Temple, and you didn't need Rittenhouse Square. So very good. Try this one, Francine. Subway system that would have these stops. Oakland City. O-A-K-L-A-N-D. Oakland City. Ooh.
Here, the BART?
Nope, it is not. There is not an Oakland City on this line. To Oakland City, add 5 points.
Oh.
You know it?
Oh, is that Pittsburgh?
No, it's... Oh, that's Three Rivers.
Oh, 5 points.
5 points. That's actually a Civil War reference. Oakland City and 5 points at Peachtree Center.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, Atlanta.
For 6 points. Right. That is right. You didn't need Georgia State, which was the last one.
Canada.
Yep. And you got two really hard ones to end. Try this one, Paula. Owings Mills.
Oh, we know.
Oh,
wait
a minute. Do know it?
Sure. Owings Mills.
Come on.
O-W-I-N-G-S. Yeah, Owings Mills.
Owings Mills.
Oh. Her hands are clasped in front of her.
Oh, Owings Mills.
She's straining for the answer.
Is that Chicago, is it?
No. It's not Buffalo.
It is not Buffalo. Mm-hmm. To Owings Mills had Cherry Hill.
Gosh, this is very frustrating.
Cherry Hill is in New Jersey.
Is in New Jersey, but it's not a subway stop in New Jersey.
It's not a subway stop.
Drat.
Owings Mills. Is that Minnesota? Is this Minneapolis?
It is not.
Shoot.
To Owings Mills and Cherry Hill at Hopkins Hospital.
Oh, Baltimore.
Baltimore, Maryland. Is that right? You did not need Camden Yards. 6 points for that. And finally, Barry, see if you can send us off with a good one here. Subway stops on what city's system? King. K-I-N-G.
Try Toronto.
Toronto.
Toronto is exactly right. 10 points.
You don't have a lot of American cities with subway stops called King.
I got to tell you, that was a great way to end. It got you a great point total, 87 points. And you know what? It wasn't enough.
No.
94 points for this week's winners, Carol and Faye Fox's team. Congratulations. Wow. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much, as always, to Joanne Wallace, Robin Smith, and all the folks at KQED-FM here in San Francisco. Fabulous week. Thanks also to Lenore Naxon, Geese Graphics, the folks here at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Scher and Salkind write the words, Antonio Oliart saves the sounds, and Zach Moore is our associate producer and webmaster. We close tonight with our periodic reminder that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, San Francisco, for showing up. See you next week. Support for Seju in San Francisco comes from the good folks at KQED-FM and the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins Hotel. Historic elegance in the heart of San Francisco. On the web at intercontinentalhotels.com. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Seju, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
And celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, you've been listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
An estimated 80% of Americans suffer from back pain at some point. This complex system requires a personal approach. Back surgery may not be right for everyone, but it can enhance quality of life for many suffering people. The team at the Vanderbilt Spine Center personalizes care for each patient based on their needs, along with proven research and years of experience. Available options include surgical and non-surgical approaches. More information is available at VanderbiltSpine.com.
On the next On Being, we explore echoes between mathematics and great existential questions, the nature of truth, free will, and how science informs the meaning of life. The physicist Jana Levin studies the origins and shape of the universe. And she's written a wonderful novel, A Madman Dreams of Turing Machines, about the figures who gave us computers. I'm Krista Tippett. That's from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Did the crackdown on dissidents during Tiananmen Square produce a wave of Chinese Christians? And why are the Chinese converting? Is it deep faith or a feeling of freedom? Also, it probably won't happen again in our lifetimes. We'll preview the coming transit of the sun by the planet Venus. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
Nashville weather for today, mostly sunny skies and the high in the mid-80s. Right now, it's 79 degrees.